This is an AI-generated summary of Hansard for Tuesday, 11th June, 1901. The House of Representatives. Mr. Watson inquired about the position of Chief Clerk to the Under Secretary of External Affairs, and Mr. Barton responded. The resolution regarding the Parliamentary Elections Bill was reported and adopted, and the clerk read a resolution concerning the Interstate Commission Bill. Sir William Macmillan from Wentworth asked Mr. Barton when the bills would be available. Mr. Barton replied, "As soon as I can get them." Sir William Macmillan considered that answer vague, while Mr. Barton expected to have them almost immediately. Sir William Macmillan remarked that it seemed ridiculous to deal with bills not in hand, and Mr. Barton of Hunter assured members that the bills would be available very soon. The House then moved to the Acts Interpretation Bill. In Clause 2, Mr. Deacon of Ballarat stated that honourable members should have a list of proposed amendments. Sir William Macmillan suggested placing bills in a box on the table for easy access, and Mr. Deacon agreed. Mr. Deacon explained that the proposed amendment would adopt the form of the English Interpretation Act by replacing "shall bind the Crown" with "shall be binding on the Crown." Mr. Glynn of South Australia withdrew any objection, remarking that the change was safer and would standardise the terminology across all acts. Mr. Deacon then moved to insert "including any rules, regulations, or bylaws" after "instrument" in Clause 3. The amendment was agreed to after some discussion, with Mr. Glynn briefly referencing American drafting practice, and Mr. Deacon maintaining that the clause would not do any injury. Clause 4 was agreed to, without amendment. Mr. Dugald Thompson of North Sydney raised a potential conflict between Clauses 3 and 5, noting that an offence might be committed before an act becomes law. Mr. Watson of Bland raised a point about bills reserved for royal assent, and the complications if the time set down precedes the royal assent. Sir William Macmillan asked whether one provision did not annul the other, and after further debate, Mr. Deacon acknowledged the difficulties, yet argued that if the dates named should have no meaning, any orders would simply become nullities. To clarify the intended operation, Mr. Deacon moved to omit a phrase and insert language, ensuring that the clause operated only when a subsequent date was intended. The amendment was agreed to. Mr. Deacon read Clause 6, which Mr. Glynn suggested postpone for further consideration. Mr. Deacon said a new clause would be prepared and introduced later, and Clause 6 was agreed to. In Clause 7, Mr. Deacon moved to replace enactment with act or part thereof, in multiple lines, to remove any doubt over its meaning, insisting that the substitution removed ambiguity. Mr. V.L. Solomon of the Free Trade Party and Mr. Glynn debated the differing phraseology, but the clause was amended and agreed to. Clauses 8 through 11 were similarly amended by omitting the word enactment and inserting the word act. Mr. Piesse of Tasmania raised concerns about the proposed disuse of the term enactment and its implications for regulations and rules made under Acts of Parliament. Mr. Deacon explained that it was preferable to be explicit about the language and that the amendment would remove doubts. These clauses were agreed to. Clause 12 was negatived, and Clause 13 was agreed to. Regarding Clause 14, Mr. Deacon proposed adding a subclause to clarify that every schedule to an act shall be deemed to form part thereof. At the suggestion of Mr. V.L. Solomon, the order of the last two subclauses was reversed, and the amendment was agreed to. Clause 15 was then read by Mr. Deacon. After Mr. Conroy of Werriwa raised an earlier point on the clause, Mr. Deacon insisted that such a provision was necessary, particularly in inferior courts, and Clause 15 was agreed to, along with Clause 16. Mr. Deacon proposed to move the omission of the words "unless the contrary intention appears" in Clause 17. Although Mr. Watson and Mr. Glynn raised concerns about the treatment of private acts, Mr. Deacon argued that the clause was contained in the English and other interpretation acts and was useful for magistrates dealing with Commonwealth laws. Consequently, Clause 17 was negatived. Clause 19 was agreed to, and Mr. Deacon introduced a new clause stating that every copy of an act printed by the government printer shall be evidence of such act and its contents. This new clause, drawn from provisions in other jurisdictions, such as New Zealand and several Australian states, was agreed to. Mr. Deakin then moved that a new clause be inserted following Clause 26. This clause provided that every provision of an Act relating to offences punishable on indictment or summary conviction, unless the contrary intention appears, shall be deemed to refer to bodies corporate as well as to persons, and that any forfeiture or penalty payable to a party aggrieved would also be payable to a body corporate in such circumstances. This amendment, suggested by the member for Tasmania, was agreed to. In the preamble, Mr. Deakin proposed inserting the word "the" between and House to ensure proper phrasing between the Senate and House of Representatives. There was further discussion regarding the definitions in the Commonwealth Constitution Act, including the meaning of Parliament and whether the King could be included, but only minor phrasing adjustments were made. The session then moved to financial matters. Mr. Turner moved that a sum not exceeding £491.998 be granted to His Majesty to defray services for the period ending 30th of June 1901 under Section 89 of the Constitution Act. Mr. MacDonald and Mr. Conroy expressed concern over the proposed amounts, noting that the salary of the Clerk of Parliaments and other figures in the States appeared high by comparison. Mr. Turner explained that part of the amount covered the entertainment of Commonwealth guests at the opening of Parliament and a subsequent reception. Members inquired about various departmental appointments and the administrative costs of the new federal structure. Mr. Watson and Mr. Conroy raised questions about the names and qualifications of individuals appointed to offices, including those who had not previously served in the other states. Mr. Turner listed, for the Senate, the appointment of a messenger, H. Scott, at a salary of £168 per year. Mr. Barton interjected approvingly regarding the competence of the appointees, emphasizing that the government must attract the best talent to its service. Sir William Macmillan noted that the debate on financial matters was an important first practical step in establishing the Commonwealth's legislative and financial practices. Sir John Forrest stated that the second reading of the Defence Bill was scheduled for the following Tuesday, and he stressed that the government should ensure expenses were minimised and strictly necessary for the essential functions of administration. After extensive debate on legislative amendments and financial proposals, the session was adjourned with members expressing a desire for further clarification on several points in future discussions. This has been a LaunchLab production. LaunchLab.com.au